Economics or embezzlement? That is the question. A Christian response to economics. 2 Peter 2 verse 19 declares, while they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. That could be written over a lot of politicians and political parties and banks. We're seeking to apply the Lordship of Christ to all areas of life. The principles for biblical economics are set out in the Biblical Principles for Africa book, which includes a free market economy must be based on the private ownership of property. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not covet the neighbor's goods. Private ownership of property is written into the scriptures. And individual free enterprise. We need to be free to be creative, to create goods and services that can be sold to the benefit of others and to the providing of the needs of ourselves and our families. And free enterprise has created some of the greatest innovations and inventions and spectacular advances in the history of mankind. The Bible is clear. Any taxation as high as 10% is oppression. Now, God requires a tenth, a tithe, the first fruits of our labors. But God is the one who provides us life, health, everything, and his tenth is designed to keep the work of the church going, which is always historically included. Works of mercy, caring for widows and orphans, education, and so much more. And so, while God requires 10%, no state has the right to demand so much. You might be interested to know that the United States of America had an exorbitant tax rate of up to 2% in 1940 when they got involved in the Second World War. Now, American taxes was less than 1% before the First World War and before the invention or creation of the Reserve Bank. What's it called in America? The Federal Reserve Bank. It's not federal. They have no reserves and they're not a bank. But anyway, it's a misnomer. Interestingly enough, the American colonists rebelled against the British because the British were taxing them 4% of their total income. 4%. Can you imagine such an evil, oppressive government as to tax 4%? And no taxation without representation. Give me liberty or give me death. So as you can ask American friends today, so how are you enjoying your taxation with representation of something like 40%? Well, in the Bible, if a government taxes 10%, they are oppressors and they are thieves. Any taxation of property is strictly forbidden in the scriptures. God forbid that you should tax my property. Any taxation of inheritance is forbidden. Death taxes is an innovation of Karl Marx and the Marxist Manifesto of 1848. You think of as the Bible says, a good man lays up an inheritance for his children and for his children's children. Now somebody's grandfather dies, and next thing you've got to pay huge death taxes. In fact, there are people who've lost their farm and their family business and their home over death taxes. If anyone's watched something like Downton Abbey, they would have realized how something like death taxes, for example, when Matthew died, and how that crippled Downton Abbey and required them to sell off a huge amount of their estate and so on. This is how socialist governments get more power, by taxing the dead. Taxing what was already taxed. Taxing inheritance. And so to tax inheritance in the Bible is strictly forbidden. Again, taxing inheritance and taxing property is a Marxist innovation brought in 1848 in the Marxist Manifesto. The Bible is also clear that any institution or individual involved in the full-time service of the Lord, including the full-time choir masters and so on in the temple, were not allowed to be taxed. Why? Because people in the full-time service of the Lord are supported by free will offerings of people who have already paid their taxes. And it's given as unto the Lord. You may not tax God. And under that principle in the old South Africa, the Bible Society was tax immune. and Bibles could not be taxed. So I was very happy in the early 80s to be able to go to the Bible study and buy Bibles. Generally, by the way, a hardcover Bible, full Bible, was 2 rand. And so for us to buy 1,000 Bibles for Mozambique and Angola was a 2,000 rand outlay, which was daunting, but at least I had the satisfaction of knowing that none of that money went to taxes. The Bible forbids taxing of God or the church, ministries or missions, or any of the free will offerings of the Lord. Any unequal or progressive system of taxation is expressly forbidden. The rich shall not give more, the poor shall not give less, if one is taxed on equal system. So say it's 1%, it's 1% across the board, and so on. Unequal, that the more productive you are, the higher the percentage. No, that's not biblical. Biblical economics also forbids unjust weights and measures. Now, money in the Bible is always described in terms of weights and measures because money is gold or silver, or something of intrinsic value. Paper is just, it's just credit. It's a promissory note. And in fact, the old money, let me show you some real money, because many of you may have forgotten and some of you may never have actually seen some real money. This is a $1 Rhodesian note. I promise to pay the bearer on demand $1 in gold. Now, that's what used to be on all of our money. And let me tell you what I could buy with a dollar. I didn't get a dollar pocket money. I didn't get a dollar for working at the local shop all day Saturday morning, say, as a packer and so on, as a 12-year-old. I'd get maybe 50 cents. But what could you do with 50 cents? Well, you could go to the cinema for 20 cents. You could buy a packet of chips for 4 cents. You could get popcorn in the cinema for 4 cents. You could get Coca-Cola in the cinema for 4 cents. For 45 cents, I could buy an Airfix pack of soldiers to paint, or an Airfix aeroplane, let's say a Spitfire or a Messerschmitt, or a tank, like a Tiger tank, and paint it. 45 cents would buy you an Airfix kit and so on, and I could get the paint for maybe another 5 cents. That's how it was in the 1970s growing up for me. Real money. And you could do a lot with this kind of money. In fact, our first mailings in 1982 for Frontline Fellowship, it cost 4 cents to send a letter. 3 cents to send a postcard. And so on. But I think many people have forgotten, and that was still a promissory note. That's a promissory note. This is not money. This is a piece of paper that represents money. And the value of it is, I promised to pay the bearer on demand $1 in gold. And if I go to the Rhodesian Reserve Bank at that time, I could theoretically be given a dollar in gold. Or silver, whatever the value was. So, this is the way money used to be. Money had intrinsic value. And so, what could you get unjust merchants doing? They would skimp the measure, they'd boost the price, they would have unjust weights and measures, they'd have something that pretended to be a pound, but it wasn't a pound. And they'd have false weights. And the Bible speaks about these criminals. And then, of course, you'd have people who'd add, say, some sand into the corn, or they would put some dross into the silver, and so they debase the currency or the food. And the Bible, of course, forbids all that. Leviticus 25 verse 10 says, proclaim liberty throughout the land. Now, this is a magnificent oil on canvas work of art, if you could see it better, but I think some of you might have seen it tonight, and it says over the top, liberty lifts the nations. The people in the foreground are seeking justice for their claims, and the elders of the city are looking up towards Lady Justice, who is holding up the scales of justice, weighing the evidence, and she has a sword pointed downwards to an open book which says Holy Bible on it. The Bible provides the principles for justice, for economics, crime and punishment, every area of life. Proverbs 11 verse 1 says, "The Lord abhors, the Lord hates dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight." So, let's give you an example of theft by inflation. 1971, I was 11 years old. My dad bought a new car in 1971 and it cost 1,000 rand. Now, interesting enough, there was an old mutual survey taken back in the 90s which said in 1971 you could buy a car for 1,000 rand. And I know that from personal experience because our family did just that. In 1981, the same amount of money, 1,000 rand, could buy a motorbike. In fact, I know that's true because I came out of the army in 1981 and I bought my first motor vehicle, a Honda 250 XL off-road, brand new, out the shop window, never ridden a bike before in my life, out the shop window, and it cost about 1,000 rand. By 2001, the buying power of 1,000 rand had collapsed so that you could buy a bicycle. I know that because we were buying 100 bicycles in a given year, giving them to evangelist chaplains. We called it Bibles and Bikes. Each bicycle, normally made in China, was 1,000 rand. Sorry, yes, 1,000 rand, that's correct. Per bicycle, that was roughly the cost. Now I'm told by my son that a good pair of running shoes costs well over 2,000 rand. Can you see how you are being stolen from by a hidden tax? Inflation is a hidden tax. Now, if you have a printing press in your garage and you're printing money, that's a crime. It's called counterfeiting. But if the government prints more money than there's value to back it, it's called inflation. Skimping the measure, boosting the price, cheating with dishonest scales, I will never forgive, says the Lord. Amos 8, verse 5 to 7. I remember when 5 rand, which was the highest denomination you had in sovereign currency, could fill your tank. Now you know 100 rand will barely move your needle out of the E. Is that not true? That is theft. It's not right. You need to know that. This is showing you how currency has changed. Now, this is the South African Rand versus the US dollar. I remember when in Rhodesia, pity I don't have the Rhodesian one backed up here, when the Rhodesian dollar was 3 times the value of 1 American dollar. An American would have to pay 3 US dollars to get 1 Rhodesian dollar. And 1 Rhodesian dollar could buy you a steak dinner in 1977 in Salisbury at a nice establishment. $2 would get you a full 3-course meal with all the frills and whistles, which I wouldn't bother with, like wine. The South African rand was stronger than the South African dollar for a long time. In fact, only in the 80s did the rand and the dollar come equal. So in the 1980s, 1 rand and $1 was basically equal. And the fact that we moved to the point where it's, what is it now, about 15 rand to the dollar, that is outrageous. Just to remind you, back in 1988, January 1988, I went on my first overseas missionary tour. I went behind the Iron Curtain to Eastern Europe, smuggled through Checkpoint Charlie. I went all over Germany, Britain, America. I came back to South Africa. It cost me 1,000 rand in air tickets and train and hovercraft and all that to cross the channel. 1,000 rand in 1988 covered a 10-week, 3-continent, 5-country mission. 1,000 rand. The devastating impact of unbacked currency or inflation on pensions and savings is criminal. There are people who worked all their life, who worked hard, who paid taxes, who paid their pensions, who are today destitute, who don't even own the house that they used to own because of taxes and inflation and debased pensions, and now people in the 80s having to go out to work, having to move from the house they used to own into some small rented something, living a really rough life simply because their pensions and their savings and their currency has been debased and rates and taxes are stealing them blind, that even the house they own, they've lost. That is theft on such a high order. This is a Rhodesian pound before we had a dollar. $10, that was the highest currency we had in Rhodesia. Here's $100 billion in Zimbabwe, and it can buy 3 eggs. But it went up to $100 trillion notes. I've got a $100 trillion note with me, by the way. And it couldn't buy a quarter of a loaf of bread in 2008. In fact, at this point, they'd already knocked 16 zeros off the currency. And there's still a $100 trillion note could not buy a quarter of a loaf of bread. In fact, you could say that all the property, businesses, and value and currency in all of Rhodesia in 1980 was more than the cost of a single brick in 2008. Now, a lot of people, millions of people got impoverished. But some people got very rich on it. Politicians and banksters did very well on this whole thing. And as the Zimbabwean said, it's cheaper to print this newspaper on money than on paper. You went to Zimbabwe and we've got the pictures where they have a sign in the toilet, no Zim dollars to be used in the toilet. Because it was cheaper than toilet paper. And people would have to go around like this to buy anything, basically. And this is Somalia, by the way. This is now a Somalian marketplace showing you how people had to do currency. You had to do weightlifting to forget about putting it in your purse, pocket. You'd need a wheelbarrow to go and buy a loaf of bread. This isn't a joke. These things actually happened. And how do you like this? 1,072,518,003,000,000 only. Now, whose calculator can keep up with this sort of thing? And so people reverted to the filthy lucre of a dollar note. And you don't want to know how many hands touched this. Because they just kept using it. When a government doesn't want its own money, you know that there's something really wrong. This month's special, no fuel. And the economy got overloaded. And this is Zimbabwe under Mugabe, the new Toyota Corolla. And people had to get very innovative. And Zimbabweans are some of the most innovative people in the world to survive. You think you've got to be innovative to survive under level 3 lockdown and with level 2 load shedding? Well, try operating in Zimbabwe. It's a lot harder. Zimbabwe doesn't have power failures. They occasionally get power. They don't have water cuts. They occasionally get water. And they've got a government that is predatory. Biblical law requires that we use honest scales of honest weights, honest money backed by real constant value. The purpose of paper money is as a promissory note of convenience that you don't have to carry your barter items or your gold or silver or whatever it is that you're going to use for trading. But then it's meant to represent real value. But right now, it's basically one big counterfeiting spree, blips on a computer screen, and a complete scam where reserve banks lend you money that doesn't exist, they create out of thin air, but you've got to work for the rest of your life and pay vast amounts of taxes to pay back the debts incurred by them creating non-existent money on a computer screen. Micah 6 verse 11 to 12 says, "Shall I count pure those with wicked balances, with a bag of deceitful weights? For rich men are full of violence. Her inhabitants have spoken lies. Their tongue is deceitful in their mouth." The African Union calculates that every year over $148 billion is stolen from the continent by its leaders, politicians. This works out to more than one-third of the continent's gross domestic product, lost to corruption every single year. GDP, one-third. 33% of the GDP is stolen by government corruption every year. That's according to an AU task force on corruption. The World Bank reports that 40% of Africa's private wealth is held offshore. In other words, most Africans don't trust their own country or continent to store their savings. They put it overseas. Global Financial Integrity calculates that Africa has lost many trillions of dollars to corruption every single year. Now that is far in excess of the total development aid given to Africa's foreign aid. Many hundreds of billions of dollars and pounds and euros of Western aid have been sunk into Africa. But sadly, not to the people of Africa, but to the governments who invariably steal it. Like the 500 billion in COVID relief, which our government got, and solidarity fund, which, where did that all go? Sorry, lost. Next. And people who were promised all the relief from their businesses being closed down and no income failed to get it, unless you're well connected with the ruling political party. Yet most states are effectively bankrupt, weighed down with debt and failing to provide even basic minimum services like electricity, plumbing, and healthcare. Most African countries today have a lower per capita income than they had at independence. Do you know that in 1955, when Ghana got its independence, Ghana had a much higher standard of living than South Korea. South Korea now is stratospherically in the hundreds of percents higher standard of living than Ghana. And Ghana used to be called the Gold Coast. Why is that? Corruption. More than half of Africa's total population live on less than $2 per day. Nahu Rabadu, the former head of Nigeria's Anti-Corruption Commission, declared the best way to attack poverty is to attack corruption. The prerequisite for all efficient, effective government is the eradication of corruption. Corruption prevents a country from realizing its potential. Corruption steals from everyone. Jacob Zuma once said famously that corruption doesn't hurt anyone. It's the exact opposite. Corruption hurts everybody. It's calculated that every one of us pays at least 20% more for every goods and services just because of the cost of corruption. I think that's very low. It's a far higher percentage than that. Corruption discourages investment. It retards development. It increases costs to the consumer. Robert Guest, the African editor of The Economist, observes in his book, The Shackled Continent, for half a century now, the continent has been deluged with aid. But this aid has failed to make Africans any less poor. It has bankrolled tyrants or idealists with hopeless economic policies. Both times of aid have been wasted, like textbooks which have never been used, just been pulped and burned, not even out of its plastic yet. They weren't delivered in the year that they needed at school, just going into pulp. Who cares? Only taxpayers' money or foreign aid. Doing business in Africa, Robert Guest says, is tricky. Bad roads, punctured by roadblocks, manned by bribe-hungry policemen. I took this picture in Nigeria. Make it slow and costly to move goods even a short distance. Local firms, meanwhile, have been held back by arbitrary government regularities, dysfunctional legal systems, and the difficulty for those without political connections of raising capital. If Africa was better governed, it would be richer. In fact, the Congo should be the richest country in Africa. It has the hydroelectric potential in the Congo River alone of providing all electricity for everyone and every business in all of Africa combined. It has the agricultural potential to feed all of Africa and export food. It has the greatest mineral wealth imaginable. Congo's got all these things in its advantage, and yet it has been looted by kleptomaniac rulers from Patrice Lumumba through Mobutu Sese Seko through the Kabilas to this day. The Congo has been looted by at least 12 other countries. In the Great Lakes War, about 8 million Congolese were killed by eight different armies of 12 different countries, including the Sudan government, the Zimbabwean, the Angolan, Central African Republic, the amount of foreign forces fighting in the Congo because of the minerals. The Congolese people lose at every turn because they've never known freedom in the last 60 years. Guest's conclusion, Africans are poor largely because they're not yet free. They live under predatory, incompetent governments which impoverish them in many ways, through corruption, through bad economic policies, and sometimes in Zimbabwe by creating an atmosphere of terror. Socialism is a philosophy of failure, the creed of ignorance, and the gospel of envy. Its inherent virtue is the equal sharing of misery. That doesn't even come close to the truth. It's the enriching of the elite and the impoverishing of everyone else. And blood diamonds, such as in Zimbabwe in the Mereng diamond fields, is just one of the examples of how one of the richest diamond fields in the world, the people of Zimbabwe have yet to benefit from at all. Under Nahu Rabadu, Nigeria's Economic and Financial Crimes Commission secured 250 convictions, recovered over $5 billion in stolen public funds. Imagine if this man, this commission, had been allowed to continue. The president of Rwanda, Paul Kagame, advocates trade, not aid. He is convinced that it's essential for Africa to end dependency on foreign aid, as foreign aid fuels corruption. Foreign aid never gets to the people who need it. It only gets to the governments, and that's where it stops. And it gets funneled off, and it only makes dictators more powerful and the people more impoverished. Corruption is the second most prevalent crime in the continent, says the African Union Task Force on Corruption. Leaders need to become more accountable to the taxpayers, and more auditors are needed. No jokes. Anti-corruption reforms are essential. As leaders steal 7 times more than the total value of foreign aid poured into Africa every year, it's clear that far more valuable than any foreign aid would be to end the corruption which is looting the resources of this great continent. Who needs foreign aid? All you need is end corruption. Why did Ramaphosa have to increase GST to 15%? All he needs to do is stop corruption. He could have cut GST down to 1%. Every week our newspapers are awash with scandals about elected officials and public servants, extravagant lifestyles and outrageous expenditures. Yet despite our state in South Africa raking in over R1.4 trillion in taxes every year, they continually run at a deficit. What happens to all that money? Taxpayers wonder, where is this money going when there's so many schools without textbooks, children being taught in open air, hospitals short of medicines, hospital patients going hungry because the provincial government has failed to pay the service providers. The Auditor General in South Africa reports that many billions of rands in unauthorized spending, that's the same thing as theft, for one fiscal year, only 3 of 39 government departments had clean audits. The rest were corruption. The Police Special Investigating Unit discovered over $30 billion lost to government corruption in just 1 year. One wonders how many prosecutions this resulted in. I don't know of any. The finances of 5 provinces in South Africa are in severe disarray, to quote them. Hitting the list of provinces spending way beyond the means is Limpopo province in the far north. Even with billions of rands overspent, Limpopo government was not able to pay doctors, nurses, teachers, social workers, and other public sector employees. They didn't even leave money in the till to pay the daily services. And Limpopo mafia indeed. Pack of criminals, all pals of Juju. And, yes, General Secretary of the ANC doesn't seem to mind. ANC duped us to get votes, their residents. ANC ward councils encouraged them to invade municipal land and return for votes, and the kickbacks, it's all been documented. Now, this is just after the World Cup soccer in 2010. What could $675 billion, which they at that stage calculate, be lost to corruption in 2010? Well, R50 billion would host 10 World Cup soccer. $25 billion would build another 1,000 schools. $216 billion would build 4 million more houses. $375 billion would build 10 new hospitals and run them for 18 years. And they had stolen at that stage $675 billion. It's true. Corruption is killing us. Governments create wealth the same way ticks create blood. Poly-ticks. Poly-many ticks, blood-sucking parasites. Politics. Many blood-sucking parasites. They leech on your skin and they suck the blood out of you. Tick bite fever, I know all about. I grew up with it. Cicero, 2,000 years ago, said in Rome, the budget should be balanced, the treasury should be refilled, public debt should be reduced, assistance to foreign land should be curtailed, lest Rome become bankrupt. People must learn to work instead of living on public assistance. Has human nature changed that much in the last 2,000 years? There's always people willing to get something for free and not give back worth in return. Former president of Cricket South Africa engulfed in corruption. Corruption on every side you want to look, whether you're looking at health, whether you're looking at the Navy, the arms deal still makes headlines. Our police commissioners have routinely been found to be corrupt and criminals. Chief of police suspended and jailed for corruption investigations. All kinds of allegations, buying illegal licenses and unscrupulous politicians squandering taxpayers' money with impunity, stealing from the poor in the name of uplifting the poor is endemic. If the provinces of South Africa were commercial enterprises, they would have been declared insolvent and liquidated to settle debts. But all too politicians seem to view their positions in government as an opportunity to enrich themselves at the public expense. It's a toxic mixture. Politics, business and greed. Sabotaging development, costing jobs and eroding the economy. I mean, you've just got to look at how the pandemic has the cost of masks. And who gets the tender to provide millions of masks? And hand washing basins, which is just a plastic tub on a bit of a metal grid with a tap. 1,400 rand each. And you know, who pays for that sort of tender? It's government. Money, who cares? The Economist has spoken about the snake of the corruption of South Africa. Everything from South African Airways, SASA, eToll, Arms Deal, SABC, Eskom, you name it. Why is it that petrol in Botswana is so much cheaper than in South Africa? Botswana is a landlocked country. Their petrol comes to Cape Town. How is it we pay so much more? It's because most of what you pay at the petrol pump is tax. Gangster state indeed. Eskom. They haven't had a single CEO who's an engineer since 2000. And you can see the results. 139 billion theft probe from Eskom. You wonder why your rates are up. What about the Cape Town city? This city works for you. We're still paying 800% water surcharge for the drought that ended over 3 years ago. They overtax us billions for water alone. For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery. Isaiah 61 verse 8. This is not just a problem for the world. Patrick Johnson, a member of our board, missiologist, author of Operation World documents, that 390 billion given to Christian causes worldwide, 25 billion of it was embezzled. There's embezzlement by the billions within the church. There are corrupt crooks within churches, ministries and missions, and I know that from personal experience. We've experienced, we've encountered, we've caught people embezzling, including treasurers and bookkeepers. Don't think this is just the world's problem. When you've got corruption at the top, it seeps all the way down. Up to 20% of the global gross domestic product is spent on bribery. 20% of all the money in the world is spent on bribery every year. Up to and over $1 trillion a year in bribes. Up to 50% of all aid to developing countries is stolen before it can even reach the intended recipients. Worldwide, over $400 billion is lost to corruption every year. Now, those are stats from Operation World, the 2010 edition of Operation World. Every year, over 10% of humankind are forced to pay a bribe. What is $1 trillion? We're talking about trillions here. What does $1 trillion look like? Okay. Here's a $100 bill. Could work for 100 rand as well. Now here's a packet of 100, so that's $10,000 or rand. It would be the same size. It can fit in your pocket. 10,000. Now that's a million. That's $1 million or rand. You could put in a plastic bag and carry it around. Now here's 100 million. 100 million looks like a pallet. You could fill a pallet with 100 million dollars or rands of $100 bills. Pallets about a ton. Now here's a billion. A billion is 10 pallets. There you go. This is what 1 trillion looks like. And by the way, those are double stacked pallets. There's a pentecticon, there's the person, there's the pallet, there's the 1 million there. These are double stacked pallets. That's 2 tons. That is the size of a football field or the wingspan of a 747 jumbo jet. Our government steals more than that every single year. Now, Stephen Mitford Goodson, good friend, I wish he was here. He used to be director of the Southern Reserve Bank. He wrote the book Inside the Southern Reserve Bank. He's a whistleblower. As he said, the South African Reserve Bank is not South African. It has no reserves and it's not a bank. And he said state capture began under Jan Smuts with the South African Reserve Bank got slid in under him. He said it's a criminal enterprise from beginning to end. He followed this up with his book, A History of Central Banking and the Enslavement of Mankind, well worth a presentation on its own. He documents that almost all the wars of the 20th century have been banksters' wars. He then did a biography on Hendrik Verwoerd and gave the evidence that Hendrik Verwoerd was assassinated specifically because he was working on a commission on changing the Southern Reserve Bank, bringing it back under Southern government control, not letting it be a Rothschild bank anymore, and next thing he's assassinated. He documented the genocide of the Boers, how the Rothschilds engineered the Anglo-Boer War to particularly bring the Boer population down and to cripple them in the concentration camps, to genocide the Boers effectively because of the fact that the gold and diamonds were under their farms. Stephen Mitford Goodson wrote a lot of other great books, including on Jan Smuts, who launched the Reserve Bank of South Africa, very shady character, also very key in the launching of the League of Nations and the United Nations. But probably the greatest corruption and theft story in history was perpetrated by the bankers, or banksters, who triggered the Great Recession of 2008 to unethical speculation and selling of worthless derivatives. If you have not yet seen the documentary Inside Job, we've got it in the library at Frontline Fellowship HQ. The banks were basically involved in a great con game. They were selling debt upon debt and speculative derivative debt upon more debt, and they got themselves selling and getting billions of worth of money from selling worthless derivatives. And Goldman Sachs and all these other criminals and crooks, not one of them got prosecuted, Morgan Stanley, the whole bunch, but they got rewarded by Obama's government. As Inside Job documents, the Obama administration of 2009 is the most Wall Street-controlled government in the history of America. The cost to the United States economy of the 2008 bubble collapse was over 135% of their GDP, in other words, more than they were worth. The cost to the United Kingdom was over 149% of the total GDP. Yet we don't know anyone who went to jail in Britain or America for this greatest bank heist in history. Although the entire government and all the bankers in Iceland went to prison. The only people who benefit from the Great Depression caused by the irresponsible speculative bubble has been the banks themselves. Henry Ford declared, "It's well that the people of the nation do not understand our banking and monetary system, for if they did, I believe there'd be a revolution before morning." Carol Quigley wrote in his massive book, Tragedy and Hope, "Their aim is nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. The system was to be controlled in a feudalistic fashion by central banks of the world, acting in concert by secret agreements arrived at in frequent private meetings and conferences. The Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Club of Rome, these are the means by which the banksters controlled governments and the world. It's estimated that approximately one-third of all business failures each year can be traced to employee theft. And of course, when businesses close down, employees lose their jobs. Families suffer. Yet it's estimated that almost half of all employees are guilty of stealing. They've got a new term for it in businesses. They call it shrinkage. Nice word for stealing. Now, obviously, somebody has to pay the cost of all this theft. And you and I and other customers have to share the burden of the billions of rands shoplifted and stolen by employees or embezzled by civil servants. In addition, we have to pay for increased insurance premiums, additional security personnel, and equipment necessitated by this spending spree. It all gets added to the price tag of everything we buy. And of course, we're paying for this for our taxes, which is meant to support the police service and the legal and judicial system and the prison system, which is all meant to be protecting us from the criminal elements of society. Biblical justice would require restitution from the thief. Our system has the victims have to pay more to sustain the thieves, and the thieves never do restitution back to the victims. Ecclesiastes 11 says, how then do people commit crime so readily? Because crime is not punished quickly enough. And that's the common sense answer. Corruption is increasing in our society because criminals are not punished swiftly enough, especially not corrupt criminals in government or in banks. Civil government is called to be a minister of God's justice, to punish those who do wrong. Civil government is to be an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. And the Bible requires restitution directly to the victim. We as Christians are called to the highest standards of integrity. We are not to fuel the corruption industry by giving into pressure to pay bribes or award contracts on the basis of political connections. Crime can be combated and corruption can be eradicated if those who claim to be Christians will live according to biblical principles. A friend of mine in Zambia, Lawrence Temple, worked in a bank, Standard Bank, and over the years he embezzled money from it. When he was caught, he was sentenced to prison. There he was converted to Christ from the book From Prison to Praise. And after serving a sentence in prison, he worked to repay the bank all that he had stolen from. Now, according to the laws of Zambia, he had done the crime and he had paid the time. Nothing more was expected from him, according to their laws. However, Lawrence knew from the scriptures that he was responsible to make full restitution. What a testimony when he repaid the bank. Lawrence Temple went on to become head of prison fellowship in Zambia, dynamic ministry to this day, and had no fellowship for the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather exposed them. So, any questions? Any comments? Economics or embezzlement? Right, it's all at Christian Liberty Books. Stephen Mitford Goodson is the author. Stephen Mitford Goodson, he is the economist who was director of the Southern Reserve Bank for 8 years, more than 8 years. Yes.
So,
yes. Well, one of the toughest doctrines of the Reformation is we get the governments we deserve. So corrupt people get a corrupt government, a weak people get a wicked government. And so when we see evil in the world, that's when 2 Chronicles 7:14 kicks in. If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven, I will forgive their sin, and I will heal their land. So plainly, it's important for us to hold our government officials responsible and not to believe the lies that they propagate and excuses that they give. And this is not just true for us, it's true for virtually every government around the planet. There's so much corruption, some are worse than others. But the fact still is, we're living in an age of tremendous corruption, and I think restitution is one of the best things. We should not be taking people who have done property crimes and putting them in prison where they get hardened and brutalized and so on, at tremendous taxpayer expense, by the way. It costs 300,000 rand for every prisoner in our prison system per year that taxpayers have to hold. But how much better if they stay with their family, stay in their community, continue to work for themselves, but do restitution? Instead of brutalizing them, they regain self-respect through restorative justice. To me, restitution is vastly superior to our penal system, which right now just brutalizes people and takes a petty criminal and turns them into a hardened career criminal. I don't like our prison system. And while you read of prisons in the Bible, it's the pagans who ran prisons, like Joseph was in prison in Egypt, but God's people were to hold restitution. How much better if the criminal now works, say, for the family that he stole from, is included in the devotions, and gets converted and discipled while doing restitution? I mean, there's so much better ways of bringing about justice, and I think restitution is at the core of it. Instead of a massive prison system, a restitution system in a society where you have accountability is not dehumanizing. In fact, it helps restore the honor of the person who had given in to crime.